From the land of the Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the second day of March 2023. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett at AgMarket.net. Gary Schnitke and Nick Polson, ag economist from the U of I, will join us to discuss the decisions farmers must make by the 15th of this month related to both crop insurance and the Arc and PLC programs. And as we close out our time together, Mike Tenura will be here to take up the weather forecast, and I'll remind you to visit our website too at willag.org to register for next week's All Day Ag Outlook. It's on Tuesday, that's the 7th day of March. If you've not registered yet, now's the time to do it. willag.org or at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn for the day settled at $6.33¾, down 2. July opinion 3/4 lower at $6.24. And December contracted $5.70½, up 1¼. May beans $15.09¼, 15 higher. July at $14.98, up 13½. And November futures at $13.67½, 8½ cents higher. Bean meals up $2 for the day. Bean oil $1.07 higher. Wheat futures up 2¾ at $7.12¾ for the soft red. And the hard red finished at 8.32¼, 11 cents higher. Live cattle futures in Chicago, $1.25 lower for the day. Feeder cattle unchanged, and lean hogs down $1.10 for this Thursday afternoon. Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net now joins us to take a look at what happened at the CME Group in Chicago for the day. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell me about trade in Chicago and what you think of this last week's worth of trade.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we've kind of taken it on the chin here lately. You know, corn finally broke out of that sideways doldrums pattern that we'd seen for weeks. Yeah, and so you break out of that range, and then all of a sudden, you know, you basically take 50 cents out of the market. Market's trading substantially lower than what it was. It looks like we bottomed out maybe for the time being there yesterday. Today, you know, down a couple cents. Nothing too exciting. As far as the bean market's concerned, bean market finally took a bath as well. Kind of took the same direction as what your corn did. But actually, beans have had a nice little rebound. We actually moved back closer to all of our moving ranges, moved above the 50-day, which is what broke a couple of days ago and led to that massive sell-off. And so, you know, we actually settled today at 15, 16 cents. Bean market actually looks like it's in a little bit better shape, relatively speaking, than the corn market.
Do you suppose it might finish the week higher?
Yes, it's certainly a possibility. You know, whenever you look at, for instance, we closed at 1529 last week, closed the day in that 1520, 1521 area. There's no doubt that you could have a higher weekly settlement, which would be pretty much incredible, you know, considering that just 2 days ago, you know, we closed down 27¾, and it certainly looked like the market was susceptible to more liquidation type selling, you know, especially considering the fact that, you know, some of your technical traders were looking at the break below that 50-day potentially attracting more selling. So, oh, I don't know. I would say it's a very real possibility. I think maybe the markets will be a little quieter going into the weekend. I don't really look at this being a big weather weekend type situation. I mean, we know pretty much what's going on in South America. It'll be very interesting to see what the WASDE numbers say next week. March is usually a very boring report, but there's definitely some thoughts that they could make some pretty good cuts as far as South American production goes. And, you know, whether they'll make any adjustments with U.S. demand is also going to be interesting.
It will be interesting to watch tomorrow, especially if the March contract can close above 1529 or last week thereabout settlement price. That would put a nice hookup into that marketplace. And if you're looking at the weekly chart, it's running right along. It went down and touched bottom of the uptrend, and it would be really kind of interesting to see. Don't know whether there's that much strength in the market. Now, we've finished up, and we'll talk with Gary Schnitke and Nick Paulson about this just a little bit, the crop insurance setting month. Volatilities were low despite those last few days of trade. Crop insurance should be cheaper than it has been, relatively speaking, because of that. And we have record prices for both corn and soybeans. Does that tell you anything about marketing and what you should do?
You know, it's you said a lot there, and there's no doubt that those are good problems to have. You know, we've got, 591, 1376, awfully good price levels. Whenever we look at, for instance, how does this mean, what does it mean for corn? Last year we were 590. The unfortunate reality, most producers have quite a bit more invested in the 23 crop than 22. Based on the timing of the fertilizer purchases, those that's got flexibility or maybe are thinking about some swing acres, certainly might be able to look at corn once again above beans, even though beans have done quite a bit of work to buy those acres because fertilizer's backed off. But the thing is that we've also lost quite a bit of ground when it comes to corn. Yes, we ended up at 5.91, but that's 21 cents higher than what we closed today. So, 5.70 and a quarter certainly isn't chump change. I mean, historically speaking, those are really good price levels. But it's going to be very complicated to see how this acreage mix plays out. I've got to think that you're still looking at safely above 90, maybe 91 type ball game as far as corn's concerned, and maybe 88 and change as far as soybeans. And I think that keeps you in a position where you're still fairly tight on beans. Whereas on corn, if you have a big yield this year, we could definitely build some serious stocks in the U.S.
What are the fundamentals you're watching that you're either worried about or that you find that might be good for the marketplace?
Yeah, I mean, we really need to see. It certainly has felt like over the last 24 hours, we've heard about some potential whispers on corn export business. We've got to see that export business, not only sales, but shipments pick up dramatically. The next 10, 12 weeks is certainly the time to shine. As far as beans are concerned, it's going to be fundamentally, I got to ask myself, what's going to happen if we really do come in closer to, like, for instance, Dr. Cordonier's numbers, which are substantially below the USDA's for both Brazil and especially Argentina. If some of those things would come to pass, then you're looking at a major reduction as far as world production goes for corn. You're already looking at 65 million tons year-on-year drop. And if that goes to 75, I believe that'd be about the biggest year-on-year drop that we've seen. So it'd be very interesting moving forward what the world fundamentals look like. And then whenever it comes to the U.S., how bad does USDA feel like demand's been hurt? Because our thought process is we still have more that we could cut out of this export game if we don't see some serious business soon.
Next week should be interesting. Start you off with Tuesday at the Beef House. Thank you for joining us there. I hope to see you. And then on Wednesday, of course, the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate. And on Thursday, I suppose you'll probably be part of the early riser session. Is that right, at the Commodity Classic in Orlando?
Yeah, so Ed Essen and I will be doing the early riser. This will be our ninth year in a row doing that particular portion. They've set up the room for 1,000 folks, so I think they're expecting quite a big crowd. But we're really looking forward to doing that. Commodity is always a great time, and definitely a lot of folks that are very interested in trying to better their operations go to that particular program.
Yeah, we're not set up for 1,000 at the Beef House, but we will have more than, we've got at least 190 in the room, and we'll be pushing 200 or better by the time we get to the weekend. So we sure look forward to having you there. Matt Bennett is with AgMarket.net, and he and the rest of that team will be over at the Beef House, or a lot of them, for next Tuesday's All Day Ag Outlook, including Kurt Kimmel and Wayne Nelson. We'll have a whole bunch of other analysts along with us as well. There'll be 10 of them up on stage to talk about soybean and corn pricing over the coming year and what farmers can do to help manage that risk. The Ag Economist will be there as well, including Gary Schnitke, Nick Paulson, Bruce Sherrick, Scott Irwin, and Jonathan Coppas. Also in the audience, we'll have a couple of extra folks that can talk about carbon markets, Sarah Sellers, and Brazil and production there, Joanna Colucci. Mark Cheney from John Deere will join us to discuss artificial intelligence and automation in his company's machinery. And of course, we'll take up the weather forecast too with Eric Snodgrass. He'll kick us off early in the morning next Tuesday. He's with Nutrien Ag Solutions. You should join us. You can do that by registering today, right now at willag.org. The cost is $30 for all of that, plus your noon hour meal from the Beef House. And, well, you'll get coffee and a cinnamon roll from the Beef House in the morning, too. Registration and details online at willag.org or at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. You know, this week we wrapped up the February crop insurance setting month, and now by the 15th of this month, March, farmers need to make a couple of decisions, what their crop insurance coverage will be, and of course, what their ARC and PLC programs would look like for the coming year. Nick Paulson and Gary Schnittke here, both are agricultural economists from the U of I. Gentlemen, thank you for being with us. Let's start, Gary, with you. Crop insurance is interesting. What were the crop insurance prices for corn and soybeans? And I want to talk about the volatility index as well.
So for corn, we came in with a projected price, average of the settlement prices during February of 5.91, a cent higher than last year of 5.90. However, importantly, the volatility went down from 0.23 last year to 0.18, which will lower crop insurance premiums into 2023. The soybean projected price is $13.76, which is down from last year of $14.33. $13.76 is still a very good projected price. The volatility this year in 2023 is 0.13, significantly lower than last year's 0.19, which will again lower the crop insurance premiums for this coming year.
The volatility index at the last five trading days of the year, I suppose when I look at it, I was thinking, wow, those last 3 days were pretty raucous, but the first part of the month must have been pretty darn calm. And that decreases, as you said, what the crop insurance premium will be. What does all of this tell you about what producers should do in the state of Illinois? And does it vary across the state of Illinois for corn and soybean decisions?
So most farmers are taking RP at a high coverage level. And if you're looking at northern Illinois, it's 85 to 80% coverage levels. If it's in southern Illinois, it's 75 to 80% coverage levels typically. And that's the same for both corn and soybeans. And if you were there last year, stay there is a very good decision. You might consider adding ECO and SCO on it. That will give you a coverage level above your RP coverage level. It's a county coverage level, and it will have a cost that you may not want to pay, but it will provide protection that over time will pay out more than is paid in, but it does have a high premium.
What are the deciding factors to add ECO or SCO?
The ability to take that premium for one thing. The other thing is that if you're particularly concerned about lower prices coming into this year, you might do ECO or SCO because that does significantly increase the price that gets covered. Having said that, it's a revenue product. So if we increase the guarantee, but if we have very good yields, we could also offset any declines in price. It's a revenue product.
Nick, if they choose to use SCO, then they're committed to using PLC for their farm programs. Is this a correct statement?
Yep. The use of SCO coverage, which again is the county level supplemental from 86% down to what your farm level product coverage level is, that is limited to acres enrolled in the PLC program. If you've got acres enrolled in ARC, there'll be adjustments and netting out of those because FSA farms don't always line up exactly with insurance units. So it gets kind of complicated. But yeah, in general, if you want SCO, your acres should be in that PLC program.
In general, there are three programs that farmers will be interested in as it relates to the farm program, ARC County, ARC IC, for to some extent for a few. You might talk a little bit about that, and then the PLC programs. Which decision processes should they go through as it relates to all three of those, and is there something that looks better for one or the other?
Well, they're different programs, but I think the overall way of looking at it for this 2023 decision, again, we are 2018 Farm Bill, at least for this year, we're still in a annual enrollment decision phase here with these programs. So you're only making a decision for 2023. And looking at where we think marketing year average prices will be for the 23-24 marketing year, it's just not likely that ARC County or PLC is going to trigger payments for corn, soybeans, or wheat. Have seen advice out there in various places online, other university extension specialists, saying that technically ARC County is probably the program that's going to be associated with a higher likelihood of payments, higher expected payments. I would agree with that because yield losses can trigger them, but we're talking about very low chances of payments from that program as well. So it's not like we're comparing a 50% chance of payments with ARC County and a 20% chance with PLC. It's like 1% and less than 1%. So very unlikely to have payments from either program. So it's really the kind of risk you're concerned with that'll drive that decision. Are you in a county and your operation concerned more with potential yield losses this year? Are you more concerned with what would need to be very large price declines? And then probably the bigger factor, I think, this year in the decision is, again, lining it up with what you'd want to do on the crop insurance side. If you're at all interested in SCO, I think that PLC is obviously the choice that you need to make.
And again, Gary, coming back to you, why would they be interested in SCO?
ECO and SCO, they would be interested in that if they want to put a county band production coverage above their RP coverage level. The most likely reason farmers would be interested in that this year is they want additional price protection they're concerned about price declines. And you can buy some of that with ECO and SCO in the form of a revenue guarantee. Again, it's a revenue guarantee. It's not strictly price, but you can get a higher coverage level. And that might look good in this year with these high production costs and relatively high prices when we set those guarantees.
That's Gary Schnicke, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus at the University of Illinois, talking about crop insurance decisions that producers need to make by the 15th of this month with their crop insurance agent. Nick Paulson also joined us. He's an ag economist as well. We were talking about the ARC and PLC decision with him. Those need to be posted with the FSA, the Farm Service Agency office in your county, by the 15th. However, if you're not changing those decisions from last year's decision, you don't need to make any contact with the FSA, and they'll just be rolled over. Both Gary and Nick, by the way, will be at the All Day Ag Outlook next Tuesday at the Beef House, along with the rest of the Farm Doc team. 10 of our agricultural brokers and analysts that you hear on the air will also talk with Mark Cheney from John Deere about automation and artificial intelligence, and we'll kick the whole day off with a brand new program from Eric Snodgrass, meaning a brand new, if you've already seen him this year, presentation. This is the first time he will make that, and it should be a great day. You can join us. $30 is the cost, but you need to register now at willag.org or at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. We're now joined by Mike Tenori. He's at T-Storm Weather. That's tstorm.net online to take a look at the weather forecast. Hi again on this beautiful Thursday, Mike.
Yeah, well, it's certainly okay out there at the moment, but there are some changes on the way, and we'll talk about that in a little bit.
Yeah, let's start in South America. Begin with Argentina, where you tell me it continues to be hot and dry.
Yeah, it's been unusually dry over the last 30 days. About 95% of expected soybean production in Argentina was drier than normal over that period of time. And the numbers are still really high no matter which angle you want to look at it. If you look at it over the last 14 days, 97% of that crop was drier than normal. If you look at it over the last 60 days, 75% of the crop, and over the longer period of the last 90 days, which encompasses most of the growing season, 87% was drier than normal. And as we move forward over the next couple of weeks, we will see some storms. You're always going to see some rain, even when you're in a drought. But we're not looking for well-organized and heavy rainfall, at least over the next 7 to 10 days. On top of that, high temperatures will be around 95 degrees over the entire period. And normal highs right now are closer to 82 or 83. So we've been in a drought. We're going to stay in a drought, and it's going to be hot and dry all the way into the middle of March across Argentina.
You have to feel for the farmers there. Otherwise, in Brazil, further to the north of them, things look to be pretty good still.
Well, yeah, a little bit wet in the southern growing areas, and that's where we're starting to harvest soybeans, and we're also planting corn in Paraná. So that might be a little sluggish over the next week, but it doesn't look anything crazy once we get beyond the next 4 or 5 days where we get some decent rains. As you move on to the north, where most of the corn is already planted, just a mix of dry periods and wet periods over the next couple of weeks. So nothing to get too excited about there. We won't start turning reproductive for corn until later in March and more so in April. So we're just kind of in that waiting game, and it's kind of like the beginning of June across the key areas of central Brazil.
Here in the United States, there's a bit of a north-south, maybe even east-west divide, too. I'm not quite certain about the second part. Have you been thinking very much about the impact of the weather now on the growing season?
Well, there's already a couple of things to think about. The number one issue is that we have a lot of snowpack across the Dakotas and Minnesota. There will be more snow at times next week and probably even into the following week. The reason we say that is because it will turn a lot colder once we get into early next week. And all indications are that it will stay colder than normal as we move into the middle of March. And so because of that alone, that snowpack is not going to go anywhere fast. Then it might increase a little bit if we get a snowstorm or two over the next couple of weeks. And just by taking that information and then extending further out into the end of March, unless the last week or two of the month are unusually dry and warm, which we don't have any reason to believe that would be the case, that means that snowpack will linger right into the start of April. And it's not too far after that that producers in at least South Dakota are deciding whether or not to plant spring wheat. So we're already going to be having these types of decisions to be making within a few weeks, and we're looking at pretty wet conditions there now. As you head to the south across the heart of the Corn Belt, it's also been pretty wet over the last 90 days. And that's something that we need to think about, because over the next 24 to 36 hours, the southeast half of the Corn Belt, including Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio, will be walloped by a pretty big rain event for this time of the year. A wind-driven system will produce 1 to 2 inches across much of each state, and that will also extend into the Mid-South, where we already saw similar types of rainfall over the last 24 hours. So they're looking at some field flooding already. If we start to get more and more rain once we get into the middle of the month, then it'll just stay wet right into April. And again, we'll need a drier period then. At this point in time, it looks like it's going to stay pretty stormy across the Corn Belt, and that's primarily because of this cold pattern that's coming up next week. Once the cold comes in, it sets up the main storm track right on top of you, and that's a pretty good recipe for at least some rain and snow, maybe not heavy rain and snow, but you'll just see rain and snow here and there. And again, this all is going to send us into April with fairly moist conditions. And we don't have a good idea on April weather yet, but we do know it will need to be pretty dry and warm at the start of the month if we're going to have a good start to planting season.
Hey, thank you very much.
Yeah, great being here, Todd.
Mike Tenor is with T-Storm Weather at tstorm.net online. Hey, do be sure to visit our website at willag.org. Register today for next week's All Day Ag Outlook. It's Tuesday, the 7th day of March. Not very far away now. The cost is just $30. I guarantee it's going to be a great day at the Beef House.